Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry, you name it. I'm Rob Brower.
I'm Scott Davis.
And, you know, Scott, I think we've had some conversation about this.
Yes.
Sometimes what gets youth ministers into trouble is their inability to wait. I don't know if you've ever found yourself in that boat. I found myself in that boat. And,
yes.
And it's sometimes it's like this. So I was here. It was pretty late. And I was making slides to promote upcoming stuff for Sunday. And we were going to promote it on a Wednesday. So I was here on a Tuesday. And, 11 o'clock rolled around. I was just about to wrap up. And I'm making a slide for this this high schooler trip we got coming up. And then I was taking a break, and I was YouTubing, and then I saw a YouTube video, and then inspiration struck. It was the Destination Unknown one that I talked about a couple episodes previously.
Yeah.
And I saw the Matthew McConaughey Lincoln commercial, and I thought, oh, I could totally use that and make a promo video out of it. So after all was said and done, and then I found the photos to use for the slide, I had to actually find audio track. Because I didn't want the second half of him speaking, but I still wanted the background music. So Somebody had made a audio only version. They recreated it using their keyboard, and it was spot on match. So I had to get those to sync up and then use that audio so that it blends perfectly with the first half of the commercial. And then in the second half, his voice I mute out completely, and it's still, but you can still hear the music.
Right.
And so then our text is then coming up. Because you don't want to see him talking in the background and not hearing his voice, and that's like kind of weird.
That's just distracting.
Plus, what he was saying was just really kind of mumbo jumbo, and it didn't make sense anyway. So it took me a little longer than normal to edit all that together, render it, and I didn't get home until like 2 a.m.
Oh my!
And so sometimes, like I could have waited, and I could have waited one more week to start that promotion, but I just like I saw it. I had to do it. It was so cool. I was like, this is gonna be awesome. And so. It wound up costing me more sleep and, you know, whatnot. I was very tired the next day. I thought I'll just come in later. But every other week we have a meeting, a planning meeting at 9:30. And so I had to come in.
Oh, man. So I forgot.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot. And so sometimes that gets me in trouble. You ever have those types of situations?
Oh, yeah, sure. Plenty of times. I have an activator part to my personality. And that activator, with a good idea or when a decision has been made to do something, the activator part of me just wants to jump in and, all right, let's move forward. Yep. Let's get her done. And it doesn't always work well to jump right in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I call it the Peter side of me. You know, I'm an activator as well.
Yeah.
And so I think there are times, though, when it gets me in trouble is when I see Jesus out on the water and I say, Lord, if it's really you, I'll jump out of the boat. And he goes, hey, Rob. And I go, yep, good enough for me. And I just jump out of the boat.
Yeah.
And what he was going to say was, hey, Rob, stay in the boat. I'm coming to you.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And then, now you're all wet.
Now I'm all wet. I'm singing. I'm like, hey, I thought you told me to jump out of the boat. No, you didn't let me finish what I was going to say. Yeah. Instead of
you have little faith, it's ye of little patience.
Exactly. And so what it comes down to is this idea of delayed gratification versus instant gratification.
Right.
And I think what I've narrowed it down to, and I've been doing some reading on it, is that if we don't have a strong enough vision, it can lead us into trouble because we start looking for that instant gratification versus the delayed gratification. I heard somebody say, and I don't know who this is attributed to, but they say that it's good to say no to something good now, so that you can say yes to something great later. God has something great stored up for you later if you can say no to some other stuff now.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, pulling my hair out trying to teach my kids some elements of financial planning.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to teach them how to, you know, develop their retirement plan. I mean, they're only teenagers.
Yeah.
So, but
never
but,
too young to start a Roth IRA, though.
But just on the level, just on the simple level of basic money management. Okay, you have a goal. You want to be able to save up your money and buy a new bicycle.
Yep.
Because this one's getting clunky and broken down, and you're tired of constantly fixing it or whatever. Yet you cannot hold on to your money. You constantly have to have. Oh, I'm craving Taco Bell. I want to go to Taco Bell, and you're spending your money on Taco Bell or on Dairy Queen or on candy or on this little gadget that you broke 10 minutes after you bought it. And, you know, quit spending your money on all these things where it's just disappearing, because you're never going to reach your goal. Your bigger goal, or, you know, like Shane, you know, Shane's old enough now that the goal is no longer replacing a bicycle. It's a car or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you know, tell yourself no right now. And, you know, and with Financial Peace University stuff, Dave Ramsey talks about that a lot, about just, you know, live like no one else now so that later you can live like no one else. And it's the same idea, whether it's finances or, anything else, especially spiritual stuff.
Yeah, and it was a little different in our adult lives. You know, sure, it's not $20 spent here or there that's going to be the killer necessarily. But, I mean, we can look at stewardship in ministry and talk about that, you know.
Right.
We want a new whatever it is, piece of equipment, right? Costs $1,000. So we scour the internet and we find one that's not quite as good. Let's face it, it's kind of crappy, but it's $400. And it'll kind of get us there. Well, that's a Band-Aid.
Right.
You know, you're not going to replace a $500 item with, you know, something that's, you know, half the price and be able to work well with it, you know. We want a new projector, but I'm not going to settle for a lower lumen projector. I need something that's high lumens because the way our lights are positioned right now, one of the lights spills over onto the screen. And our projector is not bright enough to overcome that. And so I got two options. I can either get on a lift, go up there, and we can, you know, turn that light off, remove the bulbs, whatever, or save up the money, buy a projector. Now, if I'm going to buy a new projector, this is what I'm thinking. I want the one that I can, that has its own IP address that I can cast to from my phone. You know, like I can do Google Chromecast, send a YouTube video straight to it, whatever.
Right.
I can send PowerPoint directly to it, etc. And it's wireless. You know, that's what I'm looking for. And then it's got more lumens and it's a HD. Right now we have a 720p projector. I want a 1080p. So honestly, by adding all those features, I'm looking at having to save up an extra $1,200 more than something that'll just replace that one and get by.
Right.
But it works right now, so I'm not going to spend the money.
Right.
You know? My son wants to get, he's 11, and he wants to get a Nintendo, like a new 3DS or something. And he'll get money from my mom or my stepdad. He'll have $100 and it'll just be burning a hole in his wallet. Every time we go, can I bring my wallet with me? We went out to Ocean Shores as a family and his cousin bought this snake. It's a giant stuffed snake and it was like really cool. It had a mohawk on it and stuff. And then later on we're at another store and he goes, I really want this snake. Kate got one. And so I'm like, yeah, that's like $15. $15 out of your $100. And he didn't have the cash with him, but I said, okay, I'll pay for it, but you're going to pay me back when you get home. And he did. And, you know, now he's $15 farther away from his goal.
Yep.
And he, at this point, may never get a 3DS. The 4DS will come out before he can afford a 3DS.
And it'll be that much more.
Exactly.
And he'll want that. And never, Yeah. Well, it even translates into bigger things, you know, like, so I know... I know of a church that wants to do some remodel and move some office space and convert some space into a hospitality area and all that kind of stuff. And a friend of mine, you know, in that setting is like, hey, if we just, you know, instead of looking at this small piece, what we really need is more than this. So why don't we, you know, expand this whole section of the building out and then do this and this. Because if we just deal with this small little piece now, then later when we have to address the bigger issue, we're not going to want to because we just dumped a whole bunch of money into the smaller project. And it's going to undo all of that money that we invested. So let's have the bigger dream and work toward the bigger dream as opposed to just dealing with this little piece right here and now. And it's the idea essentially comes to, you know, having an adequate God-sized vision. You know, are you going to have a vision for the bigger picture, or are you just looking at the small pieces? Are you looking at the little pieces individually, or looking at how everything all fits together, and what is the vision to take care of all of it? And I think that's what trips up a lot of churches. I think that trips up a lot of youth groups.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the issues in youth ministry, and you can tell me whether you agree or not, is I think youth ministry is one of those program-intensive ministries. We have so many programs going on. I mean, when it comes to just the nature of teens, you got to have stuff for teens to do, or they're not going to show up to do it. And that's one of the reasons why we run year-round, while like a men's ministry or women's ministry might take the summer off, right? And so because the programming is always happening, you've got, you know, Sundays are coming, Wednesdays are coming, Sundays are coming again, you're always preparing for the next program. We have a tendency to concentrate on the program. And we had an episode several series back that was kind of the macro versus the micro, the big versus small
right.
view. And this is kind of an extension of that, right?
I mean, it really is.
We start focusing on the here and now, and we're like, okay, I want tonight to be awesome. So I'm going to do all of this stuff to pour into tonight. I'm going to spend money tonight for tonight. Oh, there's this awesome game I want to do tonight. Let me just run down and buy it, right? So rather than look at your budget from this big view going, okay, listen, we wanted to save some of this money to do this huge end of year deal, but I just spent 40 of that needed $300 just for tonight. You know?
Yeah.
Sure, tonight comes off as super awesome, but then what happens later on, it's going to catch up to you. You either can't do the big deal or
it's
you
not
wind up going over budget.
It's not sustainable.
No, it's not.
You know, either financially you can't keep doing that, or space or whatever the thing is. The program is not sustainable because you're constantly having to bolster the program to be something that it's not designed to be. I agree. Youth ministry has a tendency to be program heavy, which isn't necessarily the exact same thing as program driven,
yeah.
but we tend to be program driven. And I work really hard to not be program driven. I work really hard to look at the bigger picture of what is the culture I want to create. Because if I'm program driven, then the program is going to live or die based on the personalities that are driving the program,
yeah.
and the constant understanding of that program. If I'm trying to create a culture where certain things just happen naturally because that's who we are, that's in our DNA, and we tend to produce these types of results in the lives of kids because we've taken the time to create the culture, then that's a bigger, longer-term goal, because culture develops slowly. Programs, we want it now, so we utilize programs to create the resemblance of it now, where we could have a deeper thing that's not a mask of a program if we take time. Culture is slow to develop. And so we have the long range goal of this is what I want to develop. And then we look at our programming as how does the programming help us get there? And if the programming doesn't actually fit in helping us get to that end goal culture, that's when it goes. But when we're program driven, the program becomes like a sacred cow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll cut pieces of the program in an instant if I feel like it's no longer useful or even sometimes detrimental toward achieving the culture that I want to create.
Yeah.
And so I'm always looking at the programming saying what needs to change.
You know, in our young adults ministry, we went through a book about dating with Christian values. And it talks about this idea of courtship, which is kind of an old-fashioned idea.
Right.
But the idea is that, listen, when you get to a certain age, which is dating age.
For my daughters, it's 38.
Yeah, and that's a good age. I think that's it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good age. And so once you reach that age, like, you're not playing around. You're not just going out with somebody just to you know, have fun. You're not looking for one-night stands. You're looking for long-term relationships that can develop into the relationship.
Right.
And so if you know that that's your goal, and on date number one, you go, wow, I could not see myself with this person at all. We have completely different political, religious, what have you, social views.
Yeah. Or you just, for whatever reason, know deep down that this is not
going to work. It's just not going to work. Then do you go, hey, you know, I had a really horrible time with you, and I just don't like you at all, but should I pick you up same time tomorrow?
Yeah.
No. Have you seen that commercial?
Yeah, it reminds me of those commercials. What if everybody just said what was on their mind?
And here comes my rescue text.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But honestly, though.
I'm going to call you, but I'm never actually going to follow through.
Yeah.
Great. I had a mediocre evening. Thanks. Me too.
And if you had a date like that, you wouldn't go on a second date.
No.
Because, you know, it's not going to work out. And so, but in ministry, I see so many ministries get in trouble because they're basically one night standing it. It's one night stand, 2 one-night stands a week every week. And they forget about the big picture. And if you're so busy with these one night stands and having fun just that night, to not to get crass or anything, but then you're going to miss out on the long term relationship. And so,
right.
So before you plan the evening, before you even plan the date night, you got to know, hey, this is what I'm looking for, and define the relationship, right? DTR. I am looking for a long term, and for youth ministry, you know, I'm looking for a long term, sustainable ministry. Where I can build up leaders, pour into them, teach them how to pour into kids. I want a track where I am pouring into parents and helping parents reach their kids and understand their kids' youth culture. And I want to educate parents, leaders, and then I also want to pour into teens directly and have teens, you know, know and understand the word, know their identity in Christ, you know, how to share their faith. And so if those are the things that you're building your youth ministry on, then your programming needs to reflect that.
Right. Yeah. Agree. Agree wholeheartedly. And you know, this whole idea even translates into dating relationships, in the physical side of dating relationships.
Yeah.
You know, on that Sunday when you get married, the bigger picture, the greater reward is, you know, what do you want? Do you want to be able to tell your future spouse that you saved yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and if so, then that means delaying certain gratifications now, that even though with teenagers, hormones are raging like crazy, you know, part of the motivation to hold on to your virtues in those moments is so that, you know, there's this greater thing at the other end of the spectrum that you're shooting for. And so, you know, it translates into so many different things. The delayed gratification becomes a powerful element for really empowered living.
It really is. I've used this analogy before, but let's say on your wedding day that your virtue was a wedding ring, okay? And you get up there and the minister says, can we have the exchange of the rings? And the missus pulls out a nice ring for you, nice manly, right, handsome ring. Right. She places it on your finger, says the vow, with this ring I thee wed. And you go, oh, yeah, a ring for you. I had a ring. I gave it to someone. I'm so sorry. And unfortunately, moment of transparency here, for 3.5 years when I went off to college, I had said to God, you know, I tried things your way, God, and I got nothing to show for it, so I'm going to do things my way. So I went off the deep end for about 3.5 years, and I lived for myself in instant gratification. And I can honestly say now that that is one of the things that I regret, is my wife was able to give me a gift that I could in no way return to her because I gave that gift to someone else a long time ago.
Right.
And I was like, oh, man. I wish I would have held on to that.
And that doesn't, you know, diminish God's ability to do some powerful things in spite of the mistakes we've made in our past.
No, it doesn't.
But you live with the results of the choices you make. And there is that gift that you will never be able to truly give to her, which is a result of the choices that we... And
that's something that her and I and God have worked out and reconciled and whatnot.
Right.
And we have a beautiful relationship. We've got 3 beautiful children, you know. And so it's great. And that's a gift I've been able to give her that I've never been able to give... Or not able to, but I've never given someone else. Is, you know, I've been the father of our children, right? And so... but as I look back on my younger... less wiser years.
Yeah.
I can say that's what it came down to, is if I had just said no to something that I thought, man, this is going to be good, then I would have been able to experience something even better down the road, because God had that, you know, waiting for me. And I see it played out. And I see, honestly, a lot of our young adults, a lot of our millennials kind of struggle with this same idea.
Right.
And if they're a millennial youth pastor, they may be doubly so struggling with this. The idea of just waiting so that, and we're not just talking about physical relationship now, but just the idea of just waiting so that we can have something better later.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a foreign concept. I had one young adult that I was mentoring, and he just he would ask me my advice, and I would say, hey, this is what you got to do. When it came to finances, this is what you got to do. Okay, and then he'd go out and blow his money and be like, oh, man, I blew it. Yep, you sure did. Decision to make, do I buy this right now or and get this model, or do I save up another $50 and get the next higher model? I'm like, dude, save up. If you can afford to save up and you don't need it right now, wait. Right, I couldn't wait.
Right.
Yeah, I bought it. Oh, man, I wish I would have waited because the other one had this feature that I forgot this one doesn't have. It's like, dude, like, seriously. And it just seemed like delayed gratification was not in his vocabulary at all. There was no way he could
understand it. Same thing in healthy living. Living a healthy lifestyle. So weight loss is what do they say? Weight loss is like 80% diet, 20% exercise.
Yeah.
Yet somebody who can't say no to instant gratification on the food level, they go out and they try and make up for that with extra exercise. But really, the truth is, it doesn't change the reality that 80% is diet. Yeah. And if you can't curb that, you're not going to get the long term benefit of the healthy life.
That's why over a decade ago, I had to give up soda.
Yeah,
I had to be honest with myself, and the problem is when I'm eating, whatever beverage I'm drinking with my meal, whether it's water or milk or whether it was soda, I drink a ton of. So I'm like 4, 5, 6 cups a meal kind of guy, you know. So I get full on a lot of liquid, my stomach's out to there, but with soda, I'm just ingesting so much sugar.
Yeah,
I was like, I can't be drinking this much soda, so I just cut soda out altogether. And so, if I'm drinking 5 glasses of water at dinner, not that big a deal.
Right.
5 glasses of milk, I may feel a little constipated later, but whatever, But
yeah.
5 glasses of sugar water,
oh boy,
colored carbonated sugar water, that's a completely different story.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it really translates into a lot of living. But so what would you say, Rob, is one of the biggest applications of this into youth ministry?
When it comes to youth ministry, you've got to have a strong enough vision and theology of ministry that you understand what your goals are, and you've got to understand how are you going to achieve those goals. You've got to be able to break it down and say, hey, this is the vision that God's given me. Not the vision that I came up with, mind you, but this is the vision that God's given me for a healthy, successful ministry, and these are the smart goals that I'm going to, put in place so that I can achieve that vision. And you got to work backwards from the vision. We tend to look at the here and now and go, we only have 15 kids. And so, let's plan for right now. But even in vision casting, you've got to think bigger. You've got to be able to just have that huge vision and say, this is how we're going to get there. If you do all of your programming, and you're programming for only the 15 kids you have, not for the 50 that God wants you to have, then you're going to have a ministry of 15 kids. Now, they may be 15 very healthy, strong, spiritual kids who are reading the word and in prayer, and they're going deep in their relationship with God, but that's where you're going to cap out at.
Right.
And so that's what I would say, your budget needs to reflect it. Your programming needs to reflect it. Right now, if you're not making, if you're in the summer or approaching summer and you're not making fall plans, you're not planning out far enough ahead. And so, so you need to start doing that. Otherwise, you're going to catch yourself in the fall going, oh, what do we do?
Yeah, really. At this point, your summer should be pretty much set other than pulling some details together.
And you should
be starting to plan the components for fall. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I would say about kind of the delayed gratification, instant gratification. Sometimes it's a lack of planning, a lack of vision that drives that.
Very cool. Great.
Yeah. You got anything else to add?
No, I mean, I think we really hit a lot of it. It's important. I think one of the important things for us to do is it can be so easy in youth ministry to work, and there's always more to do, and especially when summer comes around, there's always more to do, and so it can be easy to feel like we just got to constantly jump on the more that is there to do, but it's important. I would recommend carving regular time in your week to simply exist for nothing more than casting vision for the future. Mark DeVries in his book, Sustainable Youth Ministry, which we have a tendency to quote from a lot, actually, he talks about it as balcony time. I've heard other people talk about it as just vision time. But for him, he calls it balcony time because it's that time spent secluded away from normal office settings where you can simply look out on something, you know, just look out from the balcony, remove yourself from the circumstances and look out over it, get a bird's eye view and look at the bigger picture and make plans for the future. And I think he actually recommends like 4 hours a week for that, which would be, you know, roughly half of a regular workday. And I think that's even if you can't do that, taking a couple of hours a week, not to just chillax and kick back, but to intentionally look at the bigger picture, look at all the components of what is involved in your youth ministry, and look at what the typical results of those ministries tend to be, and are they moving toward a specific goal? And if they're not, then you need to set a specific goal, or maybe you have one and they're not moving towards it. Maybe you need to look at adjusting things to, you know, just see how it's all fitting together.
Yeah.
And do you have that bigger goal? And if you don't, then this is critical time for you to start thinking about what is it you want to create for you? What do you want a teenager to look like when they graduate? You know, you want them to. So, okay, really quick. You know, we had this, and I may have talked about this in the past, but we relatively recently, this year, we cut out our Sunday school program for teens
on Sunday mornings.
And it was part of that, you know, delaying the instant gratification of feeling like, you know, patting ourselves on the back for having another class on Sundays that teens could go to. But it, you know, in looking at it, it was a mediocre replication of our midweek Bible studies without the music and without a game. So it was strictly Bible lesson time. And it was meagerly attended. And it just wasn't that effective. And it was duplicating something we were already doing. But what we weren't doing was really empowering and making opportunities on a regular basis. I'm not talking about the quarter, like a quarterly service project. I'm talking about a week in and week out opportunity for teens to serve in the church. Because the bigger picture is the post-grad exodus, you know, the bigger the church is, the closer you get to this 70%, the 70% statistic of teens leaving the church after they graduate.
Yeah.
But some of the statistics, some of the things they found in the studies and such is that teens serving in the church, especially specifically serving in children's ministry, as leaders in children's ministry, begins to significantly reduce that percentage lower and lower and lower to a smaller level. And so we had nothing for that, yet we had this duplicate. So we killed Sunday school and we launched this Sunday serving thing. We have two worship services, so we tell them attend one, worship one and serve one. So, you know, come to both services on Sundays, but attend one as a worshiper and then serve in the children, or some students are in the worship bands, some are running audiovisual stuff and others are in different. So, but it's all about finding your place, training the teenagers while they're young to that regular involvement and ministry and serving in the church is normal.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got churches full of adults that refuse to work and get involved and help run things like children's ministry.
And I will say this, if you're a parent listening and you're tempted to give in and concede the point of, do I have to go to Sunday school with your preteen or teen, I would say endure the fight now. And it's real easy to try and take that instant gratification. Look, I'm tired of yelling on Sunday mornings. I'm not going to force Jimmy to go to Sunday school. But I would encourage you, you know, as much as you can, just say, yes, you have to go to Sunday school. And the deal will be this. If little Jimmy goes to Sunday school, even if he doesn't want to, he will inadvertently build relationships. He will inadvertently get mentored by youth leaders.
Yeah.
And may inadvertently grow deeper to, and closer to Christ.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if that's what you want for your child, is you want your child to be walking with the Lord when he's older. And the Bible tells us that, you know, if you train your child in the way that he should go, then when he is older, he won't depart from it. I mean, I'm an example of that. I did depart from it for a while, but I woke up and it was my foundation, my biblical foundation, that made me go, what am I doing? Why am I living this way? This is not the way that God created me to be, and I'm not happy. And when I thought back to when I was last happiest, it was when I was serving the Lord. I was living my life based on what he wanted for me. And I was like, that's when I was truly happy with me. And so I made a decision then and there. I'm going to get back to that, Rob.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here I am, you know?
Yeah. And I want to clarify, when I'm talking about what we did with Sunday school, I am not dissing Sunday school.
No, you're not.
I'm just talking about my local setting and what we had at the time. And the change has been fantastic for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was a kid, I played soccer. And I had a lot of games that were on Sundays, but our rule was you don't miss church for sports.
Mm.
And
there are a lot of parents that will not take that stance.
That is rampant today.
I paid good money for this sports league, and I'm not going to miss a game.
You know, baseball season or softball season or whatever the season may be.
Little Johnny can't lose his start.
You hardly see these kids or their families because there's another tournament. Especially tournament teams. You're gone every weekend for a season or periods of a season for a year round or whatever. And the problem is we're teaching the kids that worship is important unless you have a baseball game. Worship is important to participate in unless you have something better to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, even when I'm on vacation, if we're out of town and on vacation, I try to find a church in the area that we can go to on vacation because I'm on vacation from my job. I'm not on my vacation from God in my relationship with him. And I still have a need to worship in community as a part of the body of Christ.
So you reminded me of this last story. I'm gonna share and then we'll close. So when we were in college, after I had recommitted my life to Christ, and then I met Dana. We were dating then, and I was thinking, you know, man, this could be the girl for me. And I had asked her, hey, will you? I'm gonna be looking for a home church. Would you be interested in, you know, going with me? And she said, yes, absolutely. And so, she had committed her life to Christ. And so we're dating, and we may have been engaged at the time, and there was a camping trip. A bunch of us college friends went on a camping trip over off of the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And the campgrounds that we were at had a little amphitheater. It's a little stage and some log seats and whatnot. So it was a weekend trip, and so Dana and I, we just got up on Sunday morning, and we met and then decided to walk out towards an amphitheater. And I decided that we would have a little Bible study there. And so I had been reading a passage, and this is before God had given me a clear call to ministry, but I had decided that, you know what, since we're not able to go to church, I'm going to bring church to us. And so
right. There
was a passage I was reading in, and God had given me a word, and so I was going to share that. So had a little church service there, but what was really cool is other people were up that morning hiking and stuff, and some people, I don't know if they heard me preaching or what, but they came by, and next thing you know, I was sitting on the front of the stage, and Dana was sitting on one of the log seats, and a few more people came and joined us, and we got a little church service.
That's
right
pretty
there.
Cool. That's pretty sweet.
But the only thing that didn't happen was some dude pop out and be like, hey, bro, I got my guitar. I'm going to lead some worship for you. Man. You know, like, that would have been really cool. Or if I knew how to play guitar at that time, which I didn't, it would have been really cool. But it was pretty awesome to be able to do that.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah. That's cool.
All right, so if you have anything that you would like to share with us, any comments, questions, or clean jokes, feel free to jump on our website. I had a teacher who used to say that at the end of every class. Any questions, comments, clean jokes? And then sometimes people would tell a clean joke. Anyway, if you want to reach out to us, visit us on our website, eclectic.com. That's eklectic. You can email us. We are podcast@eclectic.com. Tweet at us on Twitter. We are at Eclectic. And on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/IamEclectic. I'm Rob.
And I'm Scott.
Thanks for listening. And
stay eclectic. Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
What night of the round table was it? Oh, shoot, I forgot the joke. Oh, which night at the round table was overweight? Wait, hold on, let me go. A friend texted this to me. I got to find it.
Okay, I'm gonna let it roll. I'm going to have to go back and insert the three beeps right before this.
Oh, man.
It's going to be hilarious. This is our outtake.
Okay. It would have been so much better if I just would have remembered the stupid joke.
It would have.
All right. Who was the largest knight at King Arthur's Round Table?
The largest knight at King Arthur's Round Table. I don't know.
Circumference. He had too much pie.
I'm glad you're laughing.
I crack me up.